Hello, everybody.
Oh, Bobby.
Hi there.
Let me get my video going here. Sorry. All right. Well, welcome. First thing I always do is ask, what is on your mind before we get started here?
Well, I've got some questions from the stuff we reviewed. Do we want to go into that, or are you just talking other stuff?
Whatever you want to do.
Well, if nobody has anything else, I have some questions.
Sure.
One of the things that kind of stuck out to me was the topic around butlers. And what that entails, and my understanding of it from the lesson was that butlers, a lot of them are the kids of your clients, but that they only should make up about 20% of the book, and that just seems a little counter to the idea of sort of multi-generational wealth, right. That we might like kick out some of the kids of the clients that we're serving. Does that make sense, my question there?
It's a really good question, and let's I'll show you how that fits in when we figure out our minimum.
Got it.
So store that up for a second, and we'll get to that. But it is a very good question, very very important for us. What other questions?
I had one kind of pertaining to the butler as well. And if this is more another time specific to our team, we can just shelf it. But you know, is there any sort of in between the 12-4-1 and the 4-1 for someone who is coming in, you know, nowhere near that 12-4-1 model? I mean, it's just, I'm sure you've run into that before where, you know, you've got a team, they want to engage, but yeah, that's a pretty dramatic move. Is there any sort of way to gradually move into that sort of phase, or you just suggest going all in?
It's a really good question, and it has to do with time. We all complain that we don't have enough, and then we set ourselves up for time sucks. You know, things that are going to suck our time. And so kind of think of that as the biggest issue that most people have is that they don't have enough time. If you have capacity, and a lot of capacity, as some new people have, then we'll talk about that too.
Okay.
But good questions, all very normal, very standard. Come up every time we try and do Supernova.
Hey, this is Charles. I've got a question.
Yeah, Charles. Charles,
a couple minutes late. I just had a client call me out of the blue. So one of the things was in that the number of times you're supposed to meet with people, one of those is, you know, at least a couple of face-to-faces. Obviously, in the current environment, that's a challenge.
Right.
But, I mean, is that – I mean, if you're speaking or in contact with clients 12 times, maybe even more, a year, let's say, and they don't want to necessarily meet face to face, I mean, is that a requirement, or is it just that this contact points? I mean.
Okay, good. Another great question, and perfect for setting us up. But let's, before we do this, I don't know who would like to lead off, but Stefan, maybe you or Tyler or Chuck or somebody. just go ahead and tell me a little more about your team and, you know, what you want to accomplish when it comes to the supernova process.
Yeah, I'll start. And I noticed a couple names on the email. I didn't know if this was a more group call with multiple teams or this is just focused for us. So if it's focused to us.
Yeah, it's just you.
Okay, great. So yeah, we're a team. The two oldest on the team are, you know, early 40s. The youngest on the team, you know, Miranda and Tyler are, you know, not far behind, but there's three advisors, two CFPs, one CFA. And Miranda is the glue that is holding the practice together. And I've already, you know, having read the book, I'm well aware of her role and how pivotal that is moving forward with Supernova. So I look forward to, you know, opportunities to increase her role within the team. And I think she is as well. And, you know, I mean, I think with our backgrounds, we try and look at things comprehensively and, you know, we're not just doing stocks and bonds and calling it a day. So, you know, we're pretty comprehensive. We do a lot of managed money and, you know, Charles being the CFA on the team does a lot of that through our discretionary platform, which is called PM, which back to your point on time, I think that to me is a foot in the right direction on, you know, time management, to be able to streamline a little bit more on at least the investment side. You know, I kind of rose my hand to bring us into your coaching just, and your call last time was the word that hit the nail exactly on the head. I think, you know, 20 years in the business, I've done well, sole practitioner. And, you know, 5-6 years ago, we transitioned to a team. But, from here, I just think, complacency. I hate that word. I'm definitely guilty of it. And I just think having accountability and, you know, just better role delineation and, you know, in an ideal world, I come into the office knowing what I'm doing, not reacting to things that come through the day. So, you know, if I'm going to do this another 20 years, I just want to really enjoy and get the most out of it, I guess is, you know, what brings me to this epiphany moment.
In terms of a capacity, where are you guys?
Yeah, I'll just finish that and then you guys can add on anything. But, I would say, you know, me being the one that's been around the longest, I have too many clients. I mean, there's no sugarcoating that. So, I don't know the exact number. And I think I doubt you remember, but I asked specifically last call on, you know, family, father, and, you know, the children, is that one relationship or multiple? So,
right.
You know, when you peel the onion back and, you know, you count those as two different households, you count a 401k, a physician's practice that has, you know, 20 partners and then the other doctors and nurses. I mean, I have a lot of clients. So if we're calling them all individual households, it's, you know, a big, big number. So for me to get down to that 100 or so number is a daunting exercise just to do in my head.
300?
I'd say, yeah, probably a little more if we're again counting every single participant through the retirement plans, but, definitely I'd say between 250 and 300 personal clients, is probably fair. And I, you know, from a production perspective, we're probably just a little under 2 million production and from a team perspective. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing worth noting that is the other, I think, big reason why I wanted to try and, you know, turn the ship is we're also, you know, whether it's 2 years or 4 years, there's a retiring FA that we're also helping transition their book. So, you know, there's more clients and more production there.
Right.
So,
more opportunities and more challenges, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. And how much is that retiring FA's practice?
That's probably just round to around another million.
Okay.
Give or take.
And what's their name?
Peter Williams. Okay.
Okay, that's important. That's capacity. Tyler, how about you?
Can you hear me?
I can.
Yep.
All right, I'm having lots of computer or internet issues. So hopefully if I turned off this video, maybe this will work a little better. One of my big issues is simply role delineation within the group. I'm definitely the youngest one in the group, or the youngest advisor in the group. I have not built up the same type of revenue that Stefan and Charles have. So I think I do have a good bit of capacity still. But thus far have not been able to, figure out what the best, role for me or the responsibilities I can take on, to maybe lessen the capacity, on the other members.
So at this point, how many clients are you responsible for and what's your general revenue contribution?
Yeah, so I think, to be perfectly honest, this is a little bit of the issue. I'd say I have about 50 clients, but it's a little unclear who, you know, there's a number of smaller clients that have kind of been funneled into my FA number that it's a little unclear who is responsible for that. So I also, just as a kind of a side note, I was also working with another partner outside of the team up until recently. And so working with her to retire her book. And then she decided to move in a different direction. So now all of a sudden I'm in a very different place than I was a couple months ago. So my production is only about 120,000.
Okay, perfect. Okay, Charles, I noticed the CFA. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you. So I looked at the questions, and maybe I can even go through a few of those.
Sure.
So you mentioned CFA. So I do love the kind of the PM, the discretionary management, the portfolio stuff. So for me, it's about, I think, providing value to the team and my practice along with balancing client interaction, right? So,
yep.
You know, if I would talk about a goal and the goal was, hey, well, we want you to do a lot less on the PM side and a lot more on the client side, I'd say, well, it's not even about money necessarily. I enjoy doing the investment piece, right?
Sure.
If I can have value for clients there and make it a differentiator, I'd like that. And I think, you know, through this crisis, to me, it's been a way to get more market share from clients and to win new business, because the portfolios that I've been the most proactive with have performed very well. And so clients have noticed, and it's been a pretty good year for me. So as far as I'm concerned, I mean, I could have this COVID crisis continue for 2 years and I'd probably do gangbusters, because it's just the right setup for me in terms of being able to work from home and having a lot of time to balance between PM and kind of getting in front of clients. So those are kind of comments on that side. In terms of time spent, you know, to be more specific, I'm probably 20% to 25% client calls, another 25% where I'm doing kind of what I call client tasks. So, and answering their questions, getting back to them via email, doing planning, doing that type of stuff. And then probably 50% is PM related, not necessarily I'm trading, but I'm just digesting information and trying to understand how to be positioned and how we want to be positioned. A lot of reading. So that's that. What was a couple other questions? So in terms of number of clients, I looked at it on a household basis. Generally, I mean, if it's a couple, right, I'm counting them as one. I'm counting the butlers in there too. I mean, maybe that's not accurate, but if I do that, I'm at 84. Okay. And, you know, I guess targets to get to 70, 75. I'm pretty good at trying to proactively trim that already a little bit. I probably, there are a few that I'm hanging on to. My production is probably this year, T12 is running at close to 550. So, you know, I think I'm on target to kind of hopefully push that towards six, even if a couple of things come in, a couple of prospects. So, you know, I feel like, you know, I'm tracking the way I want. I can, as some of those new things come in, I can push out some of these older clients. I'm the type of person who is very organized. I always look for efficiencies. I program in, you know, how often I want to talk to each client. Usually I ask them how often do they want to hear from us. And I deliver more than what they want, but I'll put in reminders for myself every, you know, 3 months or something to get in touch with them, and utilize the Morgan Stanley platform to send out ideas and things. So I certainly could adapt that to more contact, and I prefer scheduled contact. I hate being called out of the blue. So that works too. What else? I think that's, I mean, I do have one client who makes up about 20% of my book right now. I'm at a little bit less than 20%. So, you know, that's a client I speak to 2 times a week or more. We've tried to go down the planning route. Hasn't really worked. It's a unique relationship, but I know they're happy, you know, so I just kind of talk to them and help them out with what they need, which is mainly on the investment side. But there's more to that. I mean, I can get in that later, but anyway.
Okay, good. Perfect team for coaching. Sure, you couldn't have come at a better time. You've got the makings of I happen to love the PM private banking kind of look that you guys actually bring to the table. If you look at the private wealth advisors and the private bankers, they always have an analyst on the team. They've got their own portfolio they manage, and they create unique value through their knowledge of markets and other things. So I'm not one of these guys that says, you know, everything has to be managed money, and the inefficiencies of trying to do it yourself are so horrible that you're going to destroy your productivity. So, I'm not going to go in that direction. So, Charles, you're safe. here's what we're going to try and do over the next year. Is bring the best of you guys to light, okay? It's kind of like a golf swing. I don't want to remake your golf swing. I want to have you play the best golf you can possibly play, knowing what level of skill you bring to the table. I'll try and improve your skills, but I'll try and make your team as efficient and effective as you can be. You will work really well together. You're already working well together. You'll work after the year a lot better together, and you'll get a lot more productivity out of the time that you put in. So some of it will be skill training, some of the organization and structure, some of it will be branding and kind of framing your branding. Some of it will be figuring out your mission. You know, where do we want to be when we grow up? What's our mission on the earth? I think you'll enjoy it. You're eager learners, I can tell already. And all your questions will be answered as we go along. Let me just suggest that the first chapter and the first thing that we go through is trying to determine what it is that we're, how are we going to create our brand? All right. And that's where we get to the challenges when we start to talk about the client experience. And here's the part that is disturbing. It's going to be disturbing for you. Stefan, this is particularly for you because you have too many clients. It's your brand isn't determined by your best client, but by your worst client. And that's the part that should stick in your craw, and I want it to stick in your craw forever, okay? Where you go back and check yourself and say, you know, for me, what is my worst team that I coach, what was their experience like, right? It better be damn good, right? It better be just pretty much as good as the first team, you know, the best team I coach. They may not get as much out of it as another team, but they didn't get any less from me, right? So I don't differentiate you because you pay me a different amount and say, you know, you paid me less, so I'm going to give you less than my best work, right? So everybody gets my best work. And that's what, you know, you go into a Mercedes, you got the littlest Mercedes that you can drive, and you drive it into the showroom and they treat you like you've got an SL550. And that's the game. When you go to Disney World, they don't care. You just paid your fee to get in. They're going to treat you exactly like everybody else. Great. So what we want to say is, look, our clients are going to, and here's the part where it's important. When someone refers to you, a client, a relative, a friend, do they know what that client's going to get for a client experience? And the problem is when you use a multi-tier process, you can't explain it to them and you don't want to. And they can't explain it to their best friend who's got 5 million, because it depends. Anytime you have to start the sentence with "it depends," it's a bad sentence, right? So if I refer a guy with 5 million, what's his client experience going to be? It depends. Or if I refer a friend to you without telling him the 5 million part, say, I'm going to refer somebody to you, what's their experience going to be? And you go, it depends on how big they are. And that's what everybody else in the industry does. And therefore, they don't tell anybody what the client experience is. They don't market it. They don't share it because they can't describe it, because it depends. And then they don't hold themselves accountable to that experience because it varies so much. So you don't know who really, even though somebody says this is who gets a birthday card, nobody's quite sure on the team who gets a birthday card. Okay? Yeah. And that's the game, you know? The D client, who knows what they get? So that's who we are. So does that mean it's impossible to run a practice where you have some exceptions? No, we can adjust slightly, but our model is financial plan 12-4-2 and rapid response. Now, each piece of it has been grinded through, all right? So when I say it's a financial plan with full implementation of the planning process through 12 scheduled appointments, 4 reviews of the plan, 2 of them in person, and rapid response to your problems, 1-hour response, 24-hour resolution, that isn't a random conversation. That's 12, 15, 20, 25 years of work to get to that model in order to make you not go crazy running your practice and putting the client in the center of the conversation and saying, I know it's hard for you, Charles, to do 2 in-person meetings, but that's what the client wants. Okay? And as much as we might argue about that, that's what they want. They may have a few that don't want that, but the majority want that. Now, with technology, I'm not opposed to the fact that we can do these Zoom calls, and that might make up for some of the in-person experience. But there's nothing like an in-person experience, as you know. And that's when you get your introductions. That's when you have that, oh, by the way. You know, there's a conversation that happens. We happen to be in a large building, and I used to say to the FAs, never leave your client at the elevator. Always go down the elevator with them and walk them to their car. Okay? Why? Because the conversation completely changes when you get on the elevator with them and go down and go to their car. Up to that point, they treat you like you're the financial advisor. Once you get on the elevator with them and you're kind of taking care of them, now you're their son-in-law. Okay? And they go, wow, you know, this is great. Thanks. We really want to tell you about blah, 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 blah. And they now start a conversation that you've never heard before. And they let you in. And that's the part that 12-4-2 does for you. You get into a conversation that no one has ever let you into because you took the time to call them 12 times a year and meet with them and take care of them. So the game changes. And you don't understand what it is until they start mailing in the checks, until they start telling you about the money they have at another place, and they're going to move it to you because you seem to care more than anybody else. So the game is we have only so much time. Therefore, we have to price ourselves accordingly. It isn't because we don't want to do business with them. We'd love to. But we only have so much time, and we have committed to giving a great client experience. So we don't say no to people. We just say not now, and at this time, not us. But we're going to take care of you. So if that means giving it to a junior partner in the team, great. If it means giving it to a person that is on another team, or two other teams that you highly recommend that they interview in order to be taken care of. Great. Okay. But at this point, you can't do that. I had a guy, I just shared this today. I had a new friend I met him at a cocktail party. He was telling me about his experience, and he went to see a team. He worked for Merrill Lynch in the on the trading desk, and he was referred to a team in Connecticut, and I know the team, and their minimum was $10 million, and he didn't have it. And they basically told him, I'm sorry, we don't have, you know, you don't have $10 million, we can't help you. And so he went to Fidelity and had been with them ever since. But when what he was interested in learning from me was everything that he missed in the last 30 years of being at Fidelity and not having a financial planner. He had done zero estate planning. He didn't understand the value, what you guys bring to the table. He missed everything, and it was sad. I helped him. I showed him what to do and how to do it, but he wasn't convinced that teams had any value because he was so dismissed by this team. So you never dismiss somebody. You never say, you're not good enough for us. You simply say, look, at this time, we're at capacity. We'd love to take you, but we don't have, but I've got a team that is going to do a fabulous job for you. I'm going to give you three different teams that you can interview. But if you ask me which is the best one for you, I would suggest this one. But you interview them and you decide. Then the guy's never upset, right? He's never mad. So it's little things like that where you have to have common sense to manage this process. So you guys have the ability, depending on how you want to do things, to create a lot of capacity here. Tyler represents tremendous capacity, and now that I guess he's not going to be doing something with his former associate, it seems that this is perfect timing for him. I love what Charles is doing, but Charles has some capacity, you know, to leverage his skills. And can we take that skill level and market it internally so that if there really is some talent there for creating wealth, maybe we should have that as an internal marketing opportunity within Morgan Stanley so you manage 100 million of other people's money within the firm, right? So I've done that before with teams where they had a talent for something and they didn't think about the fact that marketing it internally is as good as marketing it externally. You know, why not bring in $1 billion of money from outside that you manage? Terrific. It's still revenues for you guys. So anyway, there's lots of, I think, fun opportunities. The first thing we have to do is establish what is our minimum going to be. And I give you two minimums because of the human psychology of it. So the first one is your absolute minimum. So you take your revenues, say 2 million, and you divide it by your total number of clients that are above, say, 500,000. Okay, so maybe that comes out to 300 clients. So you take the 2 million and divide it by the total number of clients that are, you know, above 250 or above 500, and that gives you a reasonable number that would be your average. Okay, maybe drop off the big one big client. That's your absolute minimum. It doesn't make any economical sense for you to bring in somebody that is below that minimum. And let's just say that was theoretically 1 million. It might be closer to 2 million, but let's just say it's 1 million, 1.5 million, whatever that number is actually. Well, theoretically, we'll say it's 1 million. Then what we look at is the top 20% of that number. So if we took 300 clients and look at the top 20%, that would be 60 clients. What's the average of that 60 clients look like? Because we don't want to duplicate our average client, do we? we want to duplicate our top 20%. So if we're going to double our business, all we need to do is have about the average client, let's say the average client is doing has 2.5 million. If we were able to bring in, say, 30 clients that look like that, we would pretty much double our business. So we make it a kind of a simple game. We want to double our business. We want 30 clients, the 2.5 million. We can do that over a 2.5, 2-year period or a 3-year period. That's our goal. That's what we try and do. So then we set that up as the plan and we go after it. That becomes kind of simple, right? It's not complicated. And you go, well, I need a really complicated business plan. No, you don't. You need something really simple that you can remember, that you can look at every day and say, okay, how many $2.5 million clients did we bring in? $3 million clients, $4 million clients. That's what we're after. We want 10 a year. Great. Maybe we want 20, but however fast you want to grow, that's your game. You guys are all young, so you should be in a growth mode. So going to 4 million is should be a reasonable probability within the next 2.5 years, 2 years, 3 years, however fast you want to grow, but you should do that. And if
hey, Ron.
Charles is as good as he says he is, he'll be doubling our business anyway.
No pressure.
Go ahead. Is that
it was me, it
Miranda?
Was Mary.
Oh,
Mary,
hi, Mary.
Mary. Hi. So one of the things that might be helpful is as you're having these conversations about getting to the right subset of people and knowing where opportunity lies is maybe at some point, I don't know if it's appropriate for this call or if you want us to wait and do it on the next call, but we have their PAR dashboard built so we can show some of the information about where clients sit, where revenues are coming from, and where there might be some inefficiencies.
Thank you for speaking up. Yes, I want that done this week.
Okay.
So, yeah. No question. So this is Mary Mock. You might have heard her introduced on the last call, and she is with Touchstone and helping out with this whole process.
Perfect. So it takes us about 15 minutes, really giving you some quick and high-level data. If you're okay with that, as long as, you know, it's 2:38 right now, you guys are okay with us taking some time at the end, I can turn it over to Matt and he can start showing you some of that data. So I just didn't want to assume you still wanted us to do that on this call and thought it would be appropriate to ask first.
Okay. Actually, if you could do another call, that would be best for me, if you don't mind.
Sure.
But Matt, are you on? Okay. Anyway, no, if you could do that, that would be terrific. And I know that that would help you all. Basically, they do the work because here's why it's valuable. Stefan, and the whole team, the value in seeing more than just the revenues or more than just the assets. We put, George Kemp put his clients through 11 different screens. If you remember from the book, there are the 11 screens. I think in the workbook, there are 9 different screens. These guys will help you look at those clients and screen them for more than just assets and revenues. And help you to see, you know, if they're going to be of value. But what you want to do is when you look at clients, you want to think of them as, are these clients profitable or not? And if I have to go to California to see them in person twice a year, what's their real minimum got to be at that point? You know, that's profitability wise, that client has to pay me quite a bit more than the client that's around the corner. So profitability comes in. How about somebody that takes up my time? So if somebody is talking to you twice a week, that person has to be, you know, a multiple of your other clients in terms of the revenues that they generate. Because your time is what is the most valuable here.
To that point, Rob, I'm sure this has evolved over the years, but you probably have a good gauge. We talk about minimum asset size, but what about production? You know, the old model of maybe 1% maybe has come and gone, but is there any from the numbers you're seeing, the numbers we're talking to you about with client size and households, is there a number that jumps out to you just even from a starting point?
Yeah, 1% is what we still use.
Okay.
I mean, you may want to, you know, if you know you're at, you know, 7/8 or 1.25 or something, you can adjust for that. But 1% is what we use pretty much. And we look at, and when we're getting 3/8, you know, that's a red light. You know, it's like, okay, we got this guy with 20 million in bonds and he never does anything.
Right.
You know, we're a bank for him. You know, we store but he never allows us to do anything. So not only is there no revenues, there's no zero profitability, you know.
So in the example we kind of laid out, if our new minimum, absolute minimum is somewhere around 1 million, you'd say that's got to be a $10,000 revenue client.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay.
That's right. So think of yourself as running a concierge physician's practice. You guys are familiar with those. They're popular now. And they'll tell you, we'd love to have you, but the minimum is $10,000 a year. And you go, well, how about if I pay you $5,000? And they go, not so much, you know.
Yeah.
We'd love to have you, but our minimum is $10,000. If you'd like to have us, that's what we do. These are all the wonderful things we do for you, but our minimum is $10,000. And that's the mentality you take on when you create a practice that has a brand, that has real value to the client. And the analogy is a good one. They have typically the average family practitioner has between 2,000 and 10,000 patients. Nobody knows that until they go in and try and wait for an appointment and they're an hour and a half waiting for their appointment. The average concierge practice has between 100 and 200. So a completely different model, you know. And for people that fly private jets, they get this, right? They know their time is valuable. And that's the mentality you got to have. We want people that fly private jets. Now, we're not going to get all of them, and we're not going to get, you know, that's our aspiration. But in the meantime, we're going to treat everybody as if they're flying privately, as if we're concierge physicians. So when you do something special, you just have to charge for it. That's all. So, and people will see, this is weird, but you think, if we charge a lot, will they think we have more value? And the answer is yes. People think you have more value when you charge more. So they think, so Charles, if you want the client to think you're smart, charge them a lot of money. All right? It's crazy, but the more you charge, the more they think you're worth. So the higher your minimum, the more the public thinks you are worth. It's the way it is. So okay. You just have to kind of wrap your arms around that and say, we would like to be in our market perceived as the best. And in order to do that, we have to charge a lot more than we're charging now. So you don't need to raise your prices. You just have to have clients that can afford to pay for it. Okay. So you got plenty of clients right now. Now you need bigger clients that represent the top 20% of your practice, and you've got to find a home for the clients that are going to be fine for somebody else, but will never really grow into the clients that you will need in the future. So you don't fire the CEO of you know, a major corporation. If you have a $500,000 rollover that's never going to go anywhere else and the people are, you know, very mature and somebody else can handle that, that's who you move to the, to someone else. You know, $250,000 rollover. It's great, but we want things where there's opportunities and where they pay us our minimum. And we don't have to do it at once. So we spend the next 4 weeks on segmentation. So you have time, but we'd like to have that packaged up and done in 4 weeks. All right. You want to have told your story to everybody you're going to keep and everybody you're going to get rid of. You want that done in 4 weeks. Then we move on to organization and then acquisition. Now, in week one and week two, we introduce organization and acquisition. So your assignment is to find your minimum, right? Establish your minimum, do the math. It's also to look at your practice and figure out where your clients came from. So Mary can help with that too. When you look at your top 50 clients, your top 60 clients, where did they come from? What do they have in common? What can we learn from them that will help us in the future in terms of garnering more of them? So we do a little bit of forensic work while we're looking at our clients to segment them. We want to look at how are we going to grow by duplicating our best clients. What do they have in common? Is there something that unique that brought them all together? And that would represent an opportunity to develop. And the third piece of it is organization, which is getting the scheduler, having your meeting with Cindy, learning the scheduler right now, week one, and then she will teach Miranda how to build the folders. Now, you guys are all, you know, isolated still, but we'll be coming back to work here fairly shortly, I think. And when we do, we want to have those folders and use them. And in the meantime, we are investing some money to try and create electronic folders, but we're still in the process of doing that. So in the meantime, I want you to know what is in the folder that goes to the client and what's in the folder that goes to you guys. Each piece, each page, there's 6 pages. Each page is really important. Each page represents an opportunity to either get to know the client better or to help the client to introduce you to people that are of value. It'll help the client to leverage a network. So each page is really important in the process. Okay.
Sounds good.
Any other?
Yeah, just one other quick question.
Sure.
I can't see everyone. Maybe you guys all have squares. You see everyone. Is Miranda on this call? And if not, when would you recommend? I mean,
she's got to be on everyone.
She should be.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I'm on this call.
Oh, okay. Yeah, there you are.
Okay.
There you are.
I just want to make sure you're there. Okay. Good. Okay.
Rob, this is Bob Hadalicone, branch manager. How are you?
Hey, Bob. How are you? Good. Thanks for introducing yourself.
You're welcome. Read your book last night, and it's excellent. It goes quickly, and it's all relatable. The question I had is, your expectation is in 4 weeks that they've already migrated those accounts away, so they're down to 100?
The intention is, yes. Mostly it's a psychological game. Okay, the first, you know, today and next week, and we'll be arguing about who and what and why do I need to keep that one and all that. By the end of the fourth week, we want to have gone through all of the psychology of, okay, I get it. Now, I may not have a place for these people to go yet. I may have not even had the conversation with them yet. But as far as I'm concerned, as the FA, these guys are gone.
Okay.
Because I've got some teams in Pennsylvania where they just literally can't send them anywhere. So we're stuck with the worst case in the world, which is doing more work for our existing clients while still servicing way too many clients. And that's a nightmare we don't want anybody to have to go through. Okay, so the sooner we can segment, the sooner Miranda gets a break. Because the game for Miranda is, we promise that we're going to get skinny, but on the other hand, we're going to ask more of you. Okay? And Miranda goes, yeah, okay, I can do this. I can do these 12-4-2 schedules. I can build these folders. I can get everything ready for everybody, but I can't do it for 500 clients, okay? I can do it for 300. Three guys, 300, okay? And that's the trade you're making with your staff, is that I get it, that we're not trying to make you crazy. So if you take 12 weeks to segment, you take 12 weeks to segment. It's kind of like a Band-Aid. The quicker you rip it off, the better. But I understand there's issues and problems and challenges and personal things. Well, that's where you can help, Bob.
Sure.
When they go, I don't know who we can give these accounts to, you go, I've got this team right here. Boom. They'd love to take them. They're going to take good care of them. You know, you can do a split or not do a split. You know, if you get rid of them completely, you have no compliance issues from the team's point of view. If you split, compliance-wise, you're on the hook for the next, wherever that long that split goes. Is that worth it to have a lawsuit that you're dragged into years later because you split for 25%, you know? So completely up to you guys.
I agree.
You won't ever miss them. And everybody worries, how am I going to make up for the money I lose on giving these clients away? No one's ever come back to us ever and said, I am making less money now that I've done Supernova. Ever. Ever. Okay? So it's really not a worry, but it's the leap of faith, right? Across the chasm. How am I going to make up for this money? But it will, you'll be paid back in many, many ways by getting some balance in your life and getting the opportunity to grow again. Because you can't grow when you're, you know, 400 pounds and you can't get up the stairs, right? You got to get skinny before you can get up the stairs or do whatever analogy you want to make. You know, we got to have fine time. Time is the key. So however you get that time, it's up to you guys. Find the time, give them away. But don't hide them in the attic, under the floorboards, in the closet, because they'll come back like the ghosts. They come back, and they come back and harass Miranda.
So, Rob, quick question on the 12-4-2 from the guy that's going to have a hard time ripping the Band-Aid off. are you looking at that totally siloed? So Tyler's doing his 12-4-2, Charles doing his, or, you know, is there, like, as I'm handing off some of these clients, you know, does, for example, does Tyler maybe do 8 of the 12 and I'm still keeping in touch with some of those, or?
Up to you.
Okay.
You know, I'm going to ask you to figure out what your ideal day is. You can also create your ideal practice where you do the 2 in persons and he does the other 10, right? Or yeah. you do 4 and he does 8. Or he does them all, or you do them all. It's up to you. That's your, you know, your discretion. You know, if somebody on the team is a great financial planner, you know, maybe they do the financial planning calls. So it's kind of up to you. And, you know, and, you know, with Charles on the team, you know, you're going to have guys that love stocks and love to talk about equities. And, you know, maybe that's not your thing. So focus on the strengths of the team and who's good at what, and give them more of what they like and take away things they don't like. Okay? Because we want everybody operating at capacity in what they're good at rather than hating part of their day. I mean, yes, we all have to be skilled at everything, right? But that may not be what we do all the time. So in the third week, we'll talk about roles and responsibilities. And that, I'd love to do it in the first week, but we can't do everything. We've just, you know, we're at 58 minutes and we're supposed to be a half an hour. But in the first week, it takes a lot more to just get comfortable. And then we go from there. So I leave you with, segmentation, organization, and acquisition. And think of it as, you know, 3 swimmers swimming down the pool at the same time. So everybody's swimming, everybody's working, everybody you're doing segmentation, organization, and acquisition all at the same time. All right?
Great.
Good. Thanks, guys.
All right, thank you.
A lot of fun.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, okay. Bye-bye. Take care, guys.